Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, the host. And today we're going to talk about the developments with Rwanda. We're going to talk to Diogene Rudasingwa. That would be Dr. Rudasingwa. He's the author of a very important book about his life and experiences in Rwanda and his differences with the present government. But we want to really catch up on his views on matters there today, and particularly in regard to Victoire Ingabire, who has a hearing coming up in Arusha. We'll talk about that during the show. And of course, we'll have also Robin Philpott, who's going to tell us about his encounter with the former Secretary General of the United Nations, Boutros Ghali, and the insights he had on the situation in Rwanda. And at the latter half of the show, we'll talk to Zafar Ben-Gaish about the ceasefire in Syria and the prospects for peace, which let's call it 50-50. Again, it's the Taylor Report. Incidentally, you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. You can find us on facebook.com/the Taylor Report. And all of our long history of broadcasts can be found at taylor-report.com. And I urge you to do it, particularly on matters like the ones we're going to talk about today. All these questions to do with Rwanda and with Syria, I think we've had some outstanding guests who've shed a lot of light on matters. I want to just tell you about Dr. Rudasingwa. He is a former chief of staff to the president of President Paul Kagame of Rwanda from the years 2000 to 2004. He is the former secretary general of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, and he is the former Rwandan ambassador to the United States, the years 1996 to 1999. He's the author of a book, Healing a Nation, a Testimony, that was published in 2013. And that is to say, he's an important figure in modern Rwandan history, and he has, after fleeing the country, basically, he has kept engaged with the matter. And you'll find, for example, Dr. Rudasingwa's writings that get this right, glpost.com. GL is for GreatLakesPost.com, also a site where you'll find the writings of David Himbara, who lives in this city and is an economist of considerable talent and who has been talking the straight talk about the situation in Rwanda and the Great Lakes generally. I'll just tell you the background here. It too involves the issue of a hearing which is going to take place on March the 4th in Arusha, Tanzania, where there is an African Court for Human Rights and People's Rights. And that court is going to be hearing the appeal hearing the appeal by advocates for Victoire Ingabire, who is imprisoned in Rwanda. She was a presidential candidate and advocate for a democratic, peaceful democratic transition to a true process, democratic process for the Rwandan people. And she wanted to be a candidate on that basis, and she was not only turned down as a candidate, but she was arrested and has spent time in and still in prison in Rwanda. And we hope, many of us hope, that she will have that the world will learn of this case, and that that court, which was established by the African Union under its previous name, Organization of African Union, Unity, I believe. It's been in existence since the late 90s. It's heard three or four cases. So far, so good, I would say. It's kind of hard to tell. These courts get started as whether they are going to be competent. But this one appears to be, and I'm really glad that there's going to be a public hearing of her situation. Among other reasons, if for no other reason, it would be addressing the matter of her personal safety, because it is very dangerous even when you're in prison in Rwanda if you're a serious opponent of the government. And so that's going to be March the 4th, and I hope people will follow it. And also, while we're waiting to speak further on Rwanda, just want to tell you that we're working on a story about Matthew Lee of Inner City Press. He was removed. His Inner City Press had accreditation for 10 years at the UN in New York. And they got not only did they have accreditation, they had a reputation for being real serious journalists. That is, they asked tough questions. And they revealed what they were learning as journalists, and really they won the applause of journalists all over the world. We should all be grateful that such work is being done. However, the bureaucrats in the inner sanctum of the United Nations, and you couldn't find a more authoritarian group of people, disembodied power, where you can't tell who's running the show, but they're definitely running it. And they decided that Inner City Press would lose its accreditation, and they did this in a matter of minutes. And they forced Mr. Matthew Lee out of the building, and they took his phone, took his laptop. Eight people in security did this. It just took a matter of minutes. All bully stuff, by the way. Go to innercitypress.com and read about it. You'll also get to hear this, what it sounds like to get hoisted out of a position you held, a perfectly legal position, and a role well served by Inner City Press. So we're going to work on that. We hope to speak to Mr. Matthew Lee next Monday. But I think we're joined now by Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Hi, Phil.
Thank you for coming in a little ahead of your time, because Dr. Rudasingwa cannot be available for a few minutes, so we're going to be talking to him later. But
okay, great.
Now, you, Robin Philpott, has written the book Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. And it's a great book. I hope everybody will acquire it. They certainly should read it if they want to think they know anything about the contemporary Rwanda. A major point or an individual that you interviewed in your book wasn't interviewed by very many people, yet he was a key figure. And this is Dr. Boutros, professor. Now I'm making everybody a doctor today. Boutros Ghali.
Mm-hmm.
And he had very important information for you. Again, other journalists had not sought him out to talk about how 1994 happened. So tell us, how did you encounter him? What was he like? What did he have to say?
Well, when I was researching this book, the original book came out in French in 2003. Then this book you talked about is an updated adaptation of that book. But, and the basis of it was I was doing research on this to try and tell the story as I think it closer to the truth, because I felt that we were all being led down a garden path with the official story. And I came across a footnote in a book. It was a biography of Madeleine Albright, where they just said, "Well, this Boutros Ghali said the Rwandan genocide was 100% American responsibility." And it was a footnote, and they poo-pooed it, and I don't think anybody had ever really noticed it or didn't want to notice it. So that I wrote to him and asked him if he would like to do an interview, and I said, I read your biography, and I've read your own book. He'd written a book about his experience in the UN, which was, by the way, shortened after one mandate. And he immediately replied. He was then head of the Francophone Summit organization and based in Paris. Mm-hmm. And so he immediately replied and said, yes, please come. And we had a fixed date to meet. And very generous with his time. And this was the first of two interviews. I did another interview after the book came out, trying to go on with it. And so I asked him, I said, well, is this true, what they say that you said? And he said, yes. And he said, the reason is that when it was time for the UN to help apply the Arusha Accords, the U.S., with the energetic support of the U.K., of London, did everything they could to prevent the UN from deploying a force which would mm-hmm. help apply those accords. In other words, keep the belligerents apart, yes. and apply the accords that had been signed a year earlier in Arusha. And they did everything that they could to stop the UN from intervening, and they succeeded. So he said that makes them 100% responsible. He was very clear about it. He said, we force these people to sign agreements, and then when it's time to apply them, we do everything not to apply them. And because, and then in a further interview, he pointed out that from what his information was from the man named Bruguière, you know, the French judge,
mm-hmm.
was that the CIA had been involved in the downing of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which the downing of the plane
president
on
President of Habyarimana
April.
And Ntaryamira of Burundi.
Right. So he was, and he was very clear about where their responsibility lay and their refusal. He said, of course, the other states, other governments did not push for it enough, which I think was almost like an observation about the state of the world then, because we're talking about 1994, after the fall of the Soviet Union, where the U.S. was going about like an absolute ruler.
Yes, the New World Order was born.
Yeah,
he
said some, and then when we talked more, I asked him.
History had ended.
Yeah, and it should be pointed out that he was ejected from the U.N. The United States, through Madeleine Albright and her man, Jamie Rubin, had engineered a plot to get him out of there. And when we discussed this situation, he said, I've worked with absolute rulers all my life. They don't want anybody to question decisions. They want everything, and right now. And he said, they can't accept discussion. They can't even accept a minimum of contradiction. And he said, I want that. He says, he said, I am the God of gods, and I will have what I want. And you want to discuss for a while? And that's, so he said, that was what the Americans operated with the UN while he was there.
Yeah.
And he didn't go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
He said that, they, in their efforts to try and get him to go gracefully, in other words, without having to use a veto, they offered him to be received at the White House by Bill Clinton. They offered him honorary doctorates from prestigious universities, so he turned to them and said, "Well, I don't accept tips." they had such contempt for this man, who is basically only trying to use diplomacy.
Yeah, incidentally, that phenomenon you're talking about, he had the endorsement of the African countries. It was considered to be not even thinkable when Madeleine Albright announced they were going to get rid of him.
Yeah.
They said, well, that's not possible. But they then went to work and twisted arms and threw people out windows, et cetera, until they got what they wanted.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, she, Madeleine Albright, we talk about her, and younger people should know who she is, but because she was a dangerous woman. But she was known to, in the State Department and wherever she was, to call him Frenchie. Mm-hmm. Boutros-Ghali, because Boutros-Ghali had, you mentioned doctor, he was a doctor. He did his doctorate in diplomacy in Paris. And at that time of history, France was still basically on the coattails of Charles de Gaulle, where he wanted to establish an independent French foreign policy outside of the American axis. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, as in up to the Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, and after, until Sarkozy, France was badly seen among the Americans. And he was, so he was called French.
Yes, we all remember Freedom Fries.
Right.
And I forget what the sin was, failure to engage in a criminal operation against Iraq, I think. I can't remember.
Right, exactly. Because France was trying to operate an independent foreign policy, which basically they've given up now.
Mm-hmm.
But so Boutros-Ghali, then they didn't get him to step down out of, you know, on his own. And so they used their veto. And they vetoed him, and then they brought in Kofi Annan, mm-hmm. because Boutros had been the first African to be Secretary General of the UN. So what they did is they knocked out somebody, and they put in a yes man in his place.
Mm-hmm. And it's been yes ever since, actually.
Exactly. Yeah.
And of course, he's recently deceased. He got very little commentary, by the way, and certainly you know, when someone speaks back to a superpower the way he did,
yeah,
it usually is marked. But I notice that the way they've handled this is just to ignore that.
Well, that's, I think, when they find somebody who they have to recognize as being somewhat important in the world, and he doesn't agree with them, well, they just erase what he stood for and what he said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this has been done with other people as well. You know, they get disappeared from the public debate.
Yeah. Now, in the book, and I'll remind our listeners, it's Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. This is Robin Philpott, Baraka Books. You quoted him, and you of course, met with him twice. Now, the material in your book, that's not found anywhere else. Am I right?
Well, no, not that interview. And the interesting thing is,
nobody's picked up on it. They've not gone and challenged him or tried it again or tried to get him to change his mind or
as far as I know, he is not on the Rwanda circuit. He is removed from the Rwanda circuit of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You do not talk to him about it. Other than people will interview him, and he'll talk about the inability of getting movement at the UN. I mean, very, very abstract things. People have picked up on this quote about 100% American responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and they've used it occasionally. But mm-hmm. it's basically, they're trying to, they probably think it, I invented it. You know, and that, the point is that, you know, I saw it in a footnote in a book,
mm-hmm.
and I just said, "Well, I got to go and find out what he stands, what he means, and is it true? Did he say that? And what is his reasoning?" And he did it. And the first interview, he was he talked about the France, about the difference between the French and the British and the Americans. You know, the Anglo,
mm-hmm.
Anglosphere versus the Francosphere, as you can call
mm-hmm.
it.
Yes.
And he talked about Fashoda. He said, yes, that still is present in people's minds. Fashoda being a showdown in of colonial powers in the 1890s, 1898 to be exact, where the British were trying to go from the Cape to Cairo,
mm-hmm.
have a train, and the French were going from Dakar to Djibouti, and they met in the Sudan area. And The French backed down, so the British were very, very, very happy of it and happy about that. And it became a crisis. It was around the time of the Dreyfus affair in France. It became a big crisis, and the sort of pro-Anglosphere people were operating like in Fashoda at that time in the 90s. This may be a bit erudite.
I have to tell you, Robin, I have interviewed, as you know, over the years, many leaders, both in France, Belgium, and in Africa, in Rwanda, Burundi. They often refer to it.
Yeah.
When they want me to understand, they say, you have to go back to the confrontation between the British and French colonialists.
Yeah,
and the idea of dividing Africa, and they had these sort of lines, some of them formal, some of them informal.
Right.
And people watch those lines to see if one empire is trying to make a move on the other.
Yeah, and basically, that's what it boiled down to in some cases. Is basically, the American policy then, from the 90s on, was we're the bully on the block, and on all the blocks, in other words. And the French are no longer going to have their areas of protection. And basically, they wanted to take over the whole of Central Africa, where France was the more the bigger of imperial power.
Yes.
And France, at that time, was still trying to operate independently, which they gave up doing.
And it has a ripple effect on Africa. With France, to the degree that they're independent, you get different sounds coming from various African countries.
Right.
Robin, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for the terrific book, Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa from Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction.
And Boutros was an interesting man, very middle of the road, you might say, diplomat that the New World Order just bowled over.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that was his problem, was that he came in there in 92, just after the New World Order had been New World Order had been proclaimed, you know, where you couldn't say no.
And they gave him a rough ride, and you're right. His book is a very good book, by the way. I urge people to read that one, Boutros Ghali. Anyway, again, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for calling.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye.
Robin Philpott, Baraka Books, Rwanda, and the New Scramble for Africa. You know, I can't off the top of my head remember the title, but if you go to Boutros Ghali, his autobiography, not exactly his autobiography, his book about his work, particularly as a diplomat, but in his work at the UN, it's a revelation. If you want to know the story of Afghanistan, it is very shocking what he has to say about who he dealt with there and things that happened, such one grisly detail that comes to my mind is that there was a man that they put him in a UN building to make him safe, and the bad guys came and went into the UN and took him, drug him out and killed him. And we don't hear about episodes like that enough. But thank goodness we did learn of it through Boutros Ghali's memoir.